is channel. This is channel 2 right. Well, I got in the wrong lane. I was supposed to be in channel 2 and I'm in channel 1. I'm supposed to be in channel 2 and I'm in channel 1. I'm supposed to be in channel 2 and I'm in channel 1, and I do that all the time. I do that all the time. I'm supposed to be in channel 2 and this is channel 1. So I have taped over the old tape. The old tape's not very good, so I haven't lost much. But I have taped over the old tape. Play on up to 17. Play on up to 17. And Otis Boggs had just said that it's raining heavy or steady over there. The Gator Band played the Star Spangled Banner, and the Georgia Band was supposed to parade, but he said for some reason it would not parade. Well, if they did, they would be soaked. The rain started this morning about 10 o'clock when I was over with Fell and Mabel. The boy, Don, telephoned that he wanted them to come get him, and it was 10 minutes after 10. Now it's almost 2 o'clock. Now it's almost 2 o'clock, and this is Channel 2 right. On Saturday, November 9, 1968, and the beginning of this visit with Fell and Mabel Patterson.
Called them out, and I'm going to tell you, he was wrong. He was putting it in touch with him, but he got rid of those watermelons, he was in there for a little while. And so I got him, put some grease on him, stop that stuff from burning. And so the next day or two, come in. Papa, we told him the horse had been mighty sick. But next day or two, all that hair come on.
Yeah.
Papa come in the house, he said, now let me tell you one thing right now. He said, you better get that hair back on that horse. He said, you're going to knock you up to 100. Papa said, well, you just let her run. That meant my other horse would have died.
Yeah.
But then I had to get fried meat grease, the bottom of fried meat grease, and I take the grease for that, and the horse ain't running back.
Well, Mabel, what did you do? Put that right down there. That's clear.
That thing is falling.
What did you do to the horse to make him gentle him up?
Oh, I just kept feeding him and brushing him.
Yeah, handling him.
Tame him like that.
And he's just a young horse.
He's about 2 years old, right from the guy.
Well, now, when we had them horses, them little fillies over there, everybody kept telling us, you see, we wasn't supposed to fool them until they were 2 or 3 years old.
Well, that ain't true. It's just like fooling with a cow. It's brushing on and messing with it. You can do anything you want to, brother.
Yeah,
but if you don't do it, you
stop man and brother. And Albany, what was their names? Mac Farkas. Farkas Estate there. Jews, and they handled, I reckon, two-thirds of the stock was sold to farmers in that country, and it wasn't nothing for them to sell a carload of mules one day, and they were big people, they had money to carry the notes, you know, and all like that, and old man Sam Marcus bought a stallion and give $7,000 for him. Now, he was a beauty. That was the daddy of this year horse. And there was a lot of them around in the community there. And they were all mighty high-spirited horses. This was not a big horse. It was a horse about the size of that little bay mare over there.
Mm-hmm.
Nice-sized horse. But, oh, my goodness, he had life. Oh, goodness.
You know, I'm kind of changing my ideas about a horse size. I used to think, well, if I'm going to have a horse, I'd like to have one good-sized horse. But I don't know, around 15 hands looked to me like it was plenty big.
Well, anything up to 1,000 pounds.
Who let
that head put along? No. I don't care about a horse.
Maybe now, don't you go ahead and do whatever you need to do.
Much over. Much over.
Well, let me tell you, I'm going in a little while.
You are? Well, would you mind driving by them in the bank?
Well, I'd be delighted. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess there's one in that you want out.
Yeah. Yeah, won't be in so tall.
That's a good way.
I don't know.
The doubt makes me do half the things I do. Then I take more time to do them right than over again and didn't do them right.
Don't ride that horse we had that I
got. Go on, get away.
I can get on with it. We drove them over in Lee County. And my sisters live about 8 miles from the river. And you have to cross the river on a ferry. Now, you know, I'd got them down where I'd put them on a ferry.
Yeah.
And so we carried that horse on and went on over there. And that was over at my brother-in-law's. Their barn was just full. Barnyard and the stockade was full of mules. And of course they were big farmers. They had a plantation, thousands of acres, just where you could look, you know, cleared, you know, land.
Yeah.
So that horse had been in there with those other mules and horses. He didn't want to leave that. He was having him one big time. So it's a sawmill down below there. And I went out of there and got them to come up there and help me catch him. And boy, whenever they put him to that buggy, you never seen nothing in your life. They had to hold him. You know, he's trying to go up on his hind feet and everything. Well, Rudy was scared for my sister was scared for us to leave that, you know, with him, but I knew I had to go home. Because, you know, Mom and Papa, you know, whenever they said to be back, you better be back. And they held him. Emmy got in the buggy and they held him. Now, a man on each side of it. Now, you can just imagine how he was playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I got in the buggy and got the lines. And I said, turn him loose. They turned him loose and you could have heard it like going on that pavement. I said, the road was hard. You could have heard that horse I've been a mile. And that buggy, you know, his feet getting in the ground. Well, whenever I drove him like that about 3 or 4 miles, it began to slow down. And I just reached up and got the hook, you know, and I let him have it. And I knew I had to tame him down before I got to that ferry. But whenever I got to that ferry, he was just as tame as he could be. He was done tied down, and I mean, he could walk on that ferry like he ought to. But I drove about 8 miles. I mean, tell you, I drove it, too.
Yeah.
And it looked like that ferry was
just... That's a right smart driving.
Yes, it was. But I tamed him down,
you know,
before I got that.
You know,
be careful, man.
I'm looking you all, Mary. It's all right. All right, and that is. But I have a horse. It was the river. It was a mile from our house to the river. And that's what we bought from Sunday afternoon, you know, and the ferry was down there. And the river bridge, you know, we walked down the railroad, and all the young folks, we'd walk down there, you know where to go and all.
Railroad.
Railroad bridge. I think it's a mile, and that flat river was a man along there. Bainbridge and up there where we lived at, on back, you know, on the other side of Cordova, Georgia, and all like that. It's heavy traffic.
Yeah.
I mean, the big river, I mean, it's wide, and it's a man. It's swift. It's got three electric light plants built on that river.
Mm.
You can take Florida Power Company's got one, Fiscana Power Company's got another one, and it's one down around Newton, Georgia. They've got that between Newton, it's between Bainbridge and Newton.
Mm.
Got another one, big plant around. I mean, they're huge plants too. They aren't little plants, they're big ones. And so crossing that ferry wasn't no easy. You know, it's pretty side, good side of the river crossing with a horse. But we used to get down there and walk that railroad bridge, and that railroad bridge, it was further from here, I believe, the far creek on, it was High Creek, going up that county line. And one time, my sister, that the ferry wasn't running, and she had a nurse, you know, she lived over there in Lee County, and she brought the nurse the children for with her. And we walked across this bridge, and so we started back with her, going home with her, him and I was. And it had two crossed eyes out at the front end, you know, and was part of the, you know, one side, you know, it wasn't no water on it, but it was those crossed eyes, you know, the bridge was high across the ground because of the river rose and come all under that, you know, way up that high. And on the other side where the troll size was at. And so this nigger that Ruby had, she couldn't walk that bridge. Somebody had to help her. Well, I was helping her. And I could walk this thing, you know, jump from one to two tires at a time, you know. Instead of walking just one tire, I'd take in two of them. And directly, it was a freight train. We just got off from over the water. And Ruby was way ahead of us with a baby. And we looked up and that freight train was coming. Well, that freight train was full, it pulled a heavy load. Well, coming downhill, it wasn't no way in the world that thing could stop. Well, I was going to jump off of that bridge, would have been about 20 feet. And I threw the suitcase away, turned that nigga loose, and Ruby said, "Maybe for God's sake, run, don't jump." And I lit out, and that nigga beat me. I said, "She could, but she could walk the thing." Well, whenever we stepped out on the other side of that train passed us. Now, that was an hour or two. I never, don't believe I ever walked that bridge no more. Because, you know, that was dangerous. Because, you know, we wasn't even, we knew about what time the trains would run, but we didn't think about that freight train being along there.
Yes, sir.
Imagine a whole lot cheaper than this other. think it is.
No,
it isn't.
No, sir, that's your best feed, the cheapest anywhere you go.
Where is that?
Out there where I get it, B&G.
B&G.
Yeah.
Do they make it themselves?
Well, the only thing he'll sell me is snap corn with molasses and protein. And you know, I used to ask him about maple cow feed. Well, he said you can buy that if you want to. But he says all that's in it that helps him is that protein. He says I can put as much protein in this if you want. I'm not saying it's better, you know, but I'm saying that's his recipe. And I just got told that's all I
Well, God, just like I told you all the time about cows, just like Mary, you know, that cow that wasn't giving enough milk to the cow. I said, so she wanted to buy some milk to feed the cow.
Yeah.
I said, feed the cow, the cow feed.
Yeah.
Well, feed the calf. Yeah. So she went and bought her some feed that was produced milk.
They was,
that's right.
Thomas, sold this dairy up here after he died and sold. And an old fellow stayed there and looked after the calves and the dry cows and all like that, and he carried the rest of them to Jacksonville. And Mabel bought two sweet calves up there for him, and she bought, we bought 3-4 sacks of the feed that he fed these calves on.
Yeah.
And it was made there in Jacksonville, and it had a lot of wheat bran and shorts and things like that in the chef feed for calves. And you know, it was good. It was showing up good calf feed. I believe that's the best calf feed I ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it did have a lot of wheat products in it.
Yeah.
They got some nice calves up yonder, but they didn't get on that milk stuff long enough. They just about 2 or 3 weeks to stop the calves to go to nibbling. But they should have had it at least 5 to 6 weeks.
And
what are they doing now?
They got two up there they're giving it to, but they, you know, new calves. But the others are eating all right now, but they're awful poor.
They can't eat it. They can't eat much.
No, they can't eat quite as take care of.
Yeah.
It just takes 1 week.
You just have to learn how to lay, maybe.
I know.
Guy,
you just can't tell people.
They won't pay you no money.
No, you just can't hear.
And they say, well, the book says so and so, and the book said this, the book said that. But the thing about it, you know, you want to work on one, we'll work on another. I know that.
Well, it takes 1 week to stun a calf.
Yeah.
It'll take you 6 months to get it out of him.
Yeah.
And make you don't ever get it out.
You just got to keep it going. You know that.
Those calves that they got up there, instead of feeding them every morning and every afternoon, a little damn, they'll keep feeding the calf for a long time.
Yeah.
Because they just like a baby. They can't eat enough, they can't hold enough to last all day long. And they'll keep feeding that trough all the time.
Yeah.
They could go in there and eat when they wanted to.
At that age, they sure are.
At that age, they ought to be, and they ought not have the feed trough in the sun either, because the sun dries the feed out.
Yeah.
Or to have it in the shade. I don't tell them nothing about this garden business out here. But I could tell them a whole lot, but they go planting stuff down. I couldn't go a
Oh, yes, sir. Nice.
And I heard all my states, you know, they began to get that money in, you know, that's what it is. You know, we know we can go around $75,000 for it rain. Our Johnson, that's the old man in here. And showers. And things in Christ and things are only 10 parts of his faith, I think. And about a little over 2 years, Bill, they just keep on to do that.
Oh, about 3 years.
And I thought, the old man, you know, I used to, he had his first wife when I was my little man, and his second wife, he said, old girl, said he always seen Phil and I was part of his family. And he talked to me and tell me things that he would tell other folks who fail too. And he told me his seat and Carolina, what it was for it. So I thought for that too.
Now, all this time, Faye had been in the house telephoning. Oh, I overheard her. They were making arrangements for this little musical evening this week when they want to raise money for the Miss Fennell's scholarship fund. And she came out now, and we went on out, and I had to fill up my water jugs, and Phil walked on out there with me, and he told me this remarkable story about my old friend Cecil Pardee not being able to fix that well up there, and the boy who lives there, he just let him go along, try it for a week or two, and then he fixed it.
I said, I told him that I would
send for somebody else to fix it if he wanted me to, and he told me he didn't want nobody to fix it, yet let alone he'd fix it himself. And I said he did. Well, that got away with that old man wasn't anything you ever seen.
I know.
Yes. Get away.
That don't hurt them. And now he had fooled out for a month or two.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. He put it in.
Yeah.
And it waits a while, and then it quit, and then it come back over here and fixed it again. And it didn't last 24 hours.
Well, you know, I was over here one time when he was here, Cecil was here, and I know he was talking like it was just the pump, and you might as well just let wind do something about it.
Well, he told me when he waked there all day, he come down here and told me, says it's a well, says there's not any water up there. And I says, that can't be. I says, that can't be. He said, well, says that's what it is. Said it's either that or said you've got to have a new pump. And I just paid $311 $0.50 for that pump. But I had to throw that away and buy a new one, a horse and a half pump.
Yeah.
I told him, I said, there ain't a thing in the world for that. That pump is guaranteed to pump water 180 feet. And I said, it's only pumping it 100. And I said, I don't know my pump.
Now that's the end of this session over on in the carport in the porch. This warm morning, it frosted, but the temperature came right on up with Phil and Mabel. And now I'm going on home with Faye, and we'll go to town, and I'll deposit that check for Mabel if she sent to the wrong bank. Now this is Channel 1 Right. This is Channel 1 Right. This is a long time afterwards. This is a long time afterwards. This is on Friday after Thanksgiving. I mean, after this meeting on Thanksgiving, that would be... That's on Thursday. The meeting at the store was on Wednesday. All the ladies gathered and transacted business for the Thanksgiving dinner. I was there, and I was going to tape a little, but it wasn't hospitable for that. And the next morning, that night, I called over and told Miss Patterson I wanted to check with her on what happened at that meeting. And also about her study session with Leona Wick on Tuesday. She'd invited me to that, and I had been promising to go. I was there once, but it was rather hurried. So this is Thursday morning then, and this is November the 21st, 1968. This is a long time after the other one just before here on the tape. Now, this is Thursday, the 21st of November, 1968, and they're getting ready for Thanksgiving. I walked in, and I had these hammers in my hand. I wanted to show Phil. One was a good hammer that I'd paid well for, and the other one was a cheap hammer, and the pincer there wouldn't draw a staple, and it was hard to draw something small. Phil said right off, he saw it, he said, that's a plumber's hammer. Well, I didn't know that. I thought it was just a cheap hammer. And then, the course of it, I related this story that Mr. Garriga told just this week on Sunday afternoon about how he borrowed money from the bank down there, Mr. Jenkins, back in 1950 to buy the Walker Grove. And Phil picked that up and told these stories, and then I got to the good one. I could almost jump over these early ones and just go over that good one, that when he was 17 and went up to Atlanta to buy a shingle mill, and he told it better than he'd ever told it before. And then after that, he went off with one of the boys that came in, and I talked to Mabel a few minutes about about her study session. But if she didn't, I don't believe she had a mind on it much this time. So this is Channel 1 Right. This is Channel 1 Right, and it's right now 383. Channel 1 right on this reel, and this tape is a good ways, the date is a good bit later than the one just preceding it.
You see, this here one's not set straight. You've got to hammer on a thing like that to, you know, no, that is not a balanced hammer.
No, it don't.
No, it's not, but that's a good hammer.
I just got the wrong hammer. I got it because it was $3.50 instead of $5.
You know, cast hammers is just about as dangerous a thing as you can use.
Yeah, I don't use them.
And if you buy a hammer to use yourself, you buy a good one.
Oh, yeah.
And true Temple or Stanley, either one's a good hammer, but helping put them things up, why, that is their cheapest stuff that you ever seen that a farmer has to use.
Oh, really?
It is. That their equipment is nothing like any other machinery that you have. It's the cheapest made stuff that there is.
Well, I didn't know that.
Which
the price is fairly high. Pretty good price on it.
That their price has a now maybe it's some better than it used to be, but oh my goodness, there was no comparison in a piece of farm equipment than it was a piece of sawmill or planing mill or any kind of piece of machinery like that.
Yeah.
Machinery, like cotton mill machinery. That is good stuff, and it's made. And it's made to fit, and it does fit. All that stuff because just a little bit of variation in one of those spinning outfits would have the biggest effect in the thread that it was spinning.
Yeah.
And it's got to be right. But the sorry stuff is made is for a farmer to use.
Well, what is that? You know, I was trying to think of that the other day. I was talking.
It's been several years ago that I made deposits on middle of the first.
Uh-huh.
And so I had a right spot of money in there. And they began to turn down checks on me the second of the day of the month.
Oh, really?
And it went to the 28th before I found it out that my checks were being turned down.
Yeah.
And so I called up Mr. Jenkins, and I told him, Mr. Jenkins, I don't know what's going on. I didn't know it had been going on since the second of the month. I said, Mr. Jenkins, I don't know what's wrong up there, but I said, something's wrong. I said, you better put some money in my account until I can get up there. I said, if I don't know the checks were turned down. And said, all right, Miss Patterson, and and I told him what to put in there. I thought, well, that'll take care of what. And he put in more than I said to put in. And so come to find out, it was their fault instead of mine. They had to give somebody else credit for my deposits.
Yeah.
Then he wrote a letter to everybody that turned the check down on me and signed the bank's name.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well,
when I moved down here, the president of the Atlantic National Bank in Jacksonville wrote this bank a letter. I'd done business with them in Jacksonville.
They wrote the First National.
And wrote the First National here and sent them a letter about me. And I was in there one day, and he told me, he says, I've got a letter from the Atlantic Bank in Jacksonville about you, and says they give you a good name, and says if there's ever anything we can do for you, says come in. But when I was building that house up there, first one of a man in the lumber business can be he can be rich one day and broke the next. The Southern Railroad owed me a big bill, and they were slow pay. And first one thing and then the other, that I need $1,000 to finish this here house. And I went in there, old Boozer, and I told him I wanted $1,000. And he said,
them here, I could get it. But, and he asked me what I wanted for it. And I think that's the second time any bank ever asked me what I was going to do with it.
Oh, really?
A little old $1,000. So, he told me, yes, I could get it. But when I bought any material or anything like that, I had to send the bill into to them some way or another and let them okay it, and then I pay for it.
Oh, I never heard of that, Phil.
I looked at him. He's an old fella, you know. I looked at him. I says, do you mean to say that if I buy something of her, that you got to approve of it before I can pay for it? He says, yes, that's to be sure that what money you borrow is to do what you say you're going to do with it. I got up and I said, I just thought I wanted $1,000. I said, I don't. I said,
how you get anybody
live with
him?
I said, I'll be damned if I ever had anybody to even say anything to me like that.
He wanted a lunch, man.
Jacksonville,
we could have called up and got
$1,000. I said, Mr. Bougie, I said, just excuse me, forget it. And a little while after that, he met me on the street down there when drugstore was on the corner where a shoe store was. He'd gone in there, I guess, to get a drink or something other. I met him. He says, I was thinking about what we were talking about the other day, and said, you come on down there and I'll fix it up. I said, the hell, I done fixed it. But the terrorist thing, now, you didn't know this old man, Pfeiffer. I don't reckon you did, didn't you?
Pfeiffer Bank,
he had the Florida Bank,
was it?
Bank bought out, Pfeiffer Bank.
Yeah.
And
I think I had a little fool in my time,
wasn't it? Yeah, he had a strip of timber down there that joined what I had, and I leased the place to build a mill down there from him. And my God,
where was that found?
Down here at River Sticks.
Oh yes. Oh.
And the land belonged to him down there, and I leased 4 acres down there to put the mill on. And my God, I could lease the Empire State Building, anything just as easy. That was a lease. It was drawn up like it was gonna for 99 years at least, and all like that, you know. I thought it was the dumbest thing I ever seen, but I had to go along with him. Then when I started to, and his man come over there and said he wanted to sell me this strip of timber next to mine because it would be too far for anybody else to get it, and while I said he wanted me to get it and all like that. Well, I went on, he got messing around, and I couldn't get nothing out of him, and I was about done and ready to move from here because I'm about done. And I went in there one day and he said yes, and they done got it all straight and all, and says, you get it, says, just as soon as make a lease and all you pay for it, man, before I start cutting it. Pay for it. I told him yes. I says it generally takes about 10 minutes to make one of those leases. And I says I can give you a check for it now and get it all done in 30 minutes. Well, he said something. I went back in there and he had it all fixed, you know, and all, and he signed the lease and gave it to me, and I give him a check. And he was hard of hearing. And he says, and he talked loud too because he was hard of hearing himself. And he told me if just before then, I went in there and he collected a $10,000 draft that I drew on a fella at the old bank at Valdosta. I didn't have a dime there. But he told me if I ever needed any money in my business to come around to see him. I was so aggravated, I told him. I said, what damn little money you got here in this bank wouldn't do me a damn bit of good. I had to talk loud so he could hear it and hold him out. Tell us I heard it.
Yeah.
Boy, they were head to head this way and down this way, trying to keep him from seeing him laugh, you know. And I signed the thing and threw the check down there and walked out.
Well, now, Mabel wasn't there to duck out on you like she was at the chain store.
No. She wouldn't stay there with me then. But now, that is true.
Well, now, did he have a reputation for that, Mabel?
No, I'll answer that. No, most of the time. I'm one of these fellas that don't much care, you know, and all that.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah, I tell you, guy, he's an easygoing fella, but when you get him mad, buddy, he's not scared of the devil himself.
He's
not
scared of him slowing down. Well, now, this fooling around with bankers, you see, what little I've done of it, it's always at their convenience. And you know, it's all right for a little while. When you were just growing up, you got in a tight somehow or other, and you had to buy the first milling equipment you bought, and you went up to Atlanta, and the fellow let you have it, and you didn't have anything to back up to. I forget how that goes. What was that? You were just a young fellow, weren't you?
Oh, yes. I was quite 17 years old.
Golly. You started
and
young, didn't you?
But the thing about it was, the thing about it was, I was so ignorant, you know. I was so ignorant that I heard them say that Mosby and Company's place, machinery place, and I'd work with the machinery too, you know. I knowed it. And I heard people say that mill don't belong to that man. If he bought it on a credit. And he said it ain't paid for, it belongs to Mosby and Company in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Well, there was an old, I guess he was the last old slavery time nigger. Old Uncle Gus Carter lived out there. And he had about 25 acres of original yellow pine right back of his house. And it was pretty. It was pretty timber. And I expect I had give the old nigger, I don't know how many crackers that he was around there, you know, and he'd have a nickel to buy a box of sardines with, and I'd give him some crackers. They come loose then in a big box, and I'd just reach in there and get him a handful and give them to him. And the man that I was working for didn't make nothing on that nickel box sardines because I gave him that in. But I had done it a lot, and the old nigga thought a lot of me. And one day I asked him, I said, Uncle Gus, I said, how about sell me that timber you got out there? He said, yes, sir, I'll sell it to you. And I asked him, I said, what do you want for it? He said, I don't know. He said, I'll ask a man over there that was, he didn't stay in the bank, but he's president of it. I can't think of his name right now. But he says, I'll ask him. And he did, and he told me what he said. He said, I think that a little bit too high, but say you can have it for $500. told him, I says, will you let me pay you for it as I cut it? He said, yes, so you can pay me for it any way you want to. So then I got the idea of going to Atlanta and buying me a shingle mill.
Oh.
And I had about enough money to go to Atlanta and bank.
Yeah.
That's about all I had.
Yeah.
And I went in Mosby and Company's place there. They did a lot of business. Oh, they were big machinery people. And mill supply and all that kind. And I asked to see Mr. Mosby. And they asked me, says, can we wait on you? Says, is there anything that we can help you? I told them, no. I want to see Mr. Mosby. I was that ignorant, you know. I thought if it belonged to Mr. Mosby,
yeah.
I had to go to Mr. Mosby to get what I wanted.
Yeah.
I guess it was something like 30, 40 minutes that I stood around there. And they told me that Mr. Mosby will see you now, and he was in an office kind of shape with this here long office, and all of the front of it there was glass. And he said, you can go right in. And there wasn't nobody except him and a woman down right along here somewhere, and he was over here, and she was down there, a woman sitting in it. And I went in there, and he asked me, he says, what can I do for you? I told him I wanted the shingle mill. He asked me what kind of shingle mill I wanted. And I sat down and I told him what kind of shingle mill I wanted. That was made by Bushy. And I wanted an American drag saw. I wanted a coilless engine, boiling engine, 12 horsepower. And I wanted 50 feet of 7-inch belt. He says, why? I says, because it lasts so much longer than a 6-inch belt. A 7-inch belt, but that's as much as you can use on the pulleys on these machines. And I told him at length that I wanted the other belt that pulled a drag saw, size of it. What kind of saw, what kind of gauge of every one of them it was. I told him to gauge what I wanted. And you know, when I was telling him that, he was putting it down. And he asked me, he said, how much do you want to pay down on this stuff? I told him I couldn't pay anything down. And he told me, he said, if I was to ship you this machine, says, can you pay the freight on it? I told him yes. He said, your daddy living? I said yes. And he asked me, says, where's your daddy at? I told him he was up in Americus, Georgia, with that Handle outfit up there making, and he sold them all to one hardware concern, and they shipped things followed at the time. Big business.
Can I have a cup of coffee or cocoa?
Asked me, would my daddy sign the note with me? I told him, I wouldn't ask him, but my mother would. Looked at me a little while and he told me, he says, any boy or boy that's got nerve enough to come up here and ask me to sell him an outfit on the print, says, I'm going to ship it to you. And I never will forget that day. About 1 o'clock, that stuff rolled in there on a flat car. Boy, before sundown, I had it unloaded and I had it out there in Augusta Carter's place.
Yeah.
So I got a little old fella, Martin, to help me. But that night, I went to digging a well, and I dug in a well to get water all that night. I worked all night that night seeing if I could get water to run the thing.
Yeah.
I did. he told me, he says, I'm going to make these notes for a year. He says, now, I know you can't pay for this in a year, but he says, when the year's up, says, then we'll fix it like you want. Told him, all right. But when I cut a call over to Shingles and shipping them, I shipped them to E.E. Lowe, Flatiron Building in Atlanta, was where his office was. You know where that was called, Flatiron Building, right back at the Healy Building. I shipped them to him, and I didn't have but three people helping me, you know, just three people besides myself running the thing. And I cut a call over to Shingles for a week, and that was somewhere about $250 to $300. I'd pay Gus Carter for the timber, and I would pay my help, and save just a little bit for myself, and I'd send Mr. Morton to check the balance. On Friday, before the year was up, on Monday, I sent him the last payment.
Is that right?
The last payment on Friday, before the note was actually due on Monday.
Yeah,
and I sent it to him. And the next Sunday night, it got burnt out.
Why, Phil?
Yeah. And, I was ashamed, scared, or anything to say anything more to him about it. About shipping me another one, doing anything about it. Barber there, Oscar Edwards. He's the man that loaned me the money to pay the freight on it. And he wrote Morsby a letter and told him what had happened. And right away, Morsby sent a man down there, and they rebabbited that engine and painted up. It looked brand new and was just as good as a new one. They rebabbed it and fixed it and all like that, and taking what else I needed, and rebuilt a drag line. I mean, the drag saw. They rebuilt that, and there was all the irons. It wasn't hurt, you know, and they just put the wood weight to it and fixed it and rebuilt that, and it was just as good as new, and shipped me a new shingle machine and saws and belt. And I was back in business. And you know, I never give them a note of no kind.
Yeah.
But at last, I never give them a note of no kind.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you now, guy, most of people can't make a living for this thing. If you know the load the fella and I have pulled, you know why we don't have nothing now. Now, just the same as that, and just so many, you know, that we are fed and taken care of, and all like that.
Mm-hmm.
But no wonder we don't have nothing now. But still, we've always, it's always been a waste.
Yeah.
Don't care what we started to do, we done it. Of course, it was a higher power that helped us, but we never been stingy, and nothing else, nothing they had, if anybody needed it, we helped them.
Well, now that's something. That was your. How did you know about the business as much as you did at that time?
Oh God, I've been in it all my life. I've been
Daddy
in it
was
from,
a sawmill man.
See my granddaddy, my uncles, and my daddy was always in that kind of business, and I know from. I expect I could have told him when I was 10 years old what I wanted.
Well, boys, you know, as I've noticed them, they may work around the mill, but they don't understand what they're doing, by and large.
Well, I imagine that's like it is now, but I don't know. If I've always been that I wanted to know what I was doing.
Yeah, well.
Now, when I went to work for the university, you know, it's the first job I had had since I was just a kid. I didn't know how to wait for nobody. Mm-hmm. And they put me there as a maintenance supervisor. And, of course, I was over all those janitors and maids and all like that, too. And I didn't know what they were supposed to do. I didn't know what they could do or how to do it.
Yeah.
But I done sure taken a course to know what to do by it. I should be.
Yeah.
Now, this is the story of Mary's husband, the young fellow over there, Willie Gigger, I believe his name is. Now, I'd heard Buster talk about him, but I didn't know he was Mary's husband.
All the children comes in, and so they just kept out. Probably they got children, they got smaller children, and they just don't want to come. And you got children, you kind of do what they want you to do.
Yeah. Well, I think the children would want to go and visit with their friends and all.
Well, I don't know. Well, Mary being married and all, she just don't think Willie would want to go, you know, down there.
She ought to give him a try.
And
because that's the only chance, you see, only chance I'd have to see Mary.
Uh-huh.
And I've never seen her.
Just going how we feel, where I'll be able to go or not. Some days I'm just not able to make it.
Well, you
can't make trucks. No, I didn't know that.
He's smart
as a whip. He
takes
takes up airplane motor, and a man been mechanic all of his life, and about it, he said it couldn't be done, but he had converted in... I can tell you, I can't. It makes these fish head boats, you know, air boats.
Yeah.
And this man had from Fort Pierce in it, he said it couldn't be done.
Yeah.
So Paul just showed him what Willie had done. I don't know how many of those, three of those boats I think he's made.
Yeah.
And that is the neatest way. He makes that grill for that motor, you know. That's a mighty dangerous thing.
Yeah.
And he makes a grill out of half-inch pipe.
Oh.
And it's bent around, you know. And every one of those things is just exactly right. It's not like most of people cut a piece and it's bent more here or over here or some place like that. And it don't look... in a round shape, you know, it hasn't got that thing that you can tell it's a homemade outfit, but not him.
Oh.
And I say it'd do anybody good to just go out there and see that grill.
Over there, please?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
that he makes himself out of half-inch pipe. Well, half-inch pipe don't bend too good. And
now, where is that place? Over there on the Denton Hill?
You know, where you turn to go, like you want to 75 at McAnulty?
Yeah.
That where you turn to your left there, is the second house on the right where his mother lives.
Right
and
there.
The shop is right back of her.
Right there in McAnulty.
Uh-huh, and then that trailer back of his, that house is there where they live at.
Oh, where'd I get the idea they were out there at the Denton place?
Yeah, I don't know, her brother, her grandson lives out there. But, Willie's a good welder, too.
Oh, really?
He can, whenever anybody can weld or brass or anything, you know, they got...
Has he got welding equipment right there?
Equipment.
Right there where he is?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir, he's got...
Willie, what's his name?
Willie Giga. It's spelled Giga, but they pronounce it Giga. But he's a quiet boy,
Got settling.
Now, this is a narrative of Willie Giga, and this is the end of this tape. This is the end of Channel 1 Right. Channel 1 Right. This is the end of Channel 1 Right, and right in the middle of the Mrs. Patterson's narrative and Fell's narrative of Willie Giger. That's Mary's husband, and I don't know where I'll go from here. This is in the end, Channel 1 Right, and is it the 21st of November?